This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 659. It's time for the Nerdist Community Corkboard. What you got, Katie?
Well, do you guys like Back to the Future and cruises?
Well, I think you know we do.
Well, there's a Back to the Future cruise that starts on November 7th of this year. It is a charity for the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research. And it is a week-long vacation on the world's largest cruise ship with lots of fun and exciting adventures. It doesn't say.
I believe Norwegian Epic currently is the largest cruise ship.
It might be. It has a picture of it. It's really cool.
Does it go 88 miles per hour?
No.
Not
it does about 36 knots.
How fast is that?
Fucking fast for a giant ship, bro.
And how fast is that in miles per hour?
Like 30.
30 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, I guess that's fast.
For something that's 1,063 feet and 40 decks?
Yeah, I guess that's
like
true.
Like the Enterprise.
Yeah, that is pretty big.
Speed. Let me see if that's the right ship.
Yeah.
It looks really cool.
Well, it's not the Norwegian Epic. Unless they didn't.
It could just
be
a picture of a ship.
Guys, I want to know.
Katie coming in with
guys,
reasons. It could just be a ship that they put
guys,
in there. It doesn't necessarily
guys,
have to be that.
Guys, there's special guests, okay? Cast and crew of your favorite films. That's the Back to the Future films. Sailing from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with fun port stops at Cozumel, Jamaica, and the cruise's own private resort beach.
Sweet!
Reservations for this once-in-a-lifetime event can only be made through our official travel agents listed below on the website, www.bttfcruise.com. Rates are going to vary depending on room type. You know, if you want an interior-facing room, that's not going to be great for cruise ship guys. It's going to be kind of not great. So, balcony. I recommend getting a balcony. Plus, it's for charity. You can write it off.
Space Jonah, help us.
Sail along into the future.
Come and be a Marty McSwim on this cruise ship. Uh-oh, looks like we might have to avoid some reef tannin.
Guys, I'm still throwing you impressed points for Marty McSwim, which is fantastic.
Oh, it's on the Oasis of the Seas.
Okay, good. Well, we saw that.
So, and the closing night ceremony, Oasis Under the Seas Dance.
That's right. It's very similar to the...
They just played Don't Look Back in Anger.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say it's very similar to the Beatles at the Sea Boat.
Yes.
But, you know. That's the thing. You know, sometimes when you think... You ever think about episodes that we do and you go, oh, I should have said this thing? I know Matt doesn't.
Guys, the Oasis of the Seas weighs 100,000 tons. It is 1,186 feet tall. It was constructed in 2007, launched in 2008, draft of 31 feet. Wow.
Where do you Doc Brown something like that?
Well, in Jamaica, well, Cozumel, and the private resort beach.
Well, it was initially in the Von Braun's, and then it changed it to Brown. It's over in the... You have to say something about the JFK airport.
Oh, wait. Why?
Who the hell is John F. Kennedy?
Oh, yes.
Oh, God, what was the name of the original street?
Do you guys know where...
Was it Sycamore?
I don't know.
But you're going to have to
know what we're talking about.
I will.
No, don't tighten it up. Let it go. Let it free. No. Freewheeling on the Nerdist Podcast. Royal Caribbean's beautiful $1.4 billion cruise ship, the Oasis of the Seas, is going to take you back to the future for a good cause.
Back to the future.
Guys, It is 72 meters above the waterline. That's pretty tall. 16 passenger decks. Boy, oh boy. 5,400 passengers at double occupancy and an emergency. She can hold 6,200.
I wonder if Mayor Goldie Fish Wilson will be there.
You know, she set a new record for carrying over 6,000 passengers. Can you believe it, guys?
That By the way, on the ship, if you want a Pepsi, you don't have to pay for it.
You know, I do recommend on cruise ships, guys, you can get a drink package up top. It's going to save you a lot of money in the long run. Go for it. Never been on a cruise in my life, but I'm somehow fascinated with cruise ships.
You certainly do. Which is not surprising. I can see that. I see that
it's
in the
closest I have to the Enterprise.
No, I get it. This episode is Tom Lennon returning. He's promoting The Odd Couple Thursdays at 8:30 on CBS. Tom Lennon getting a hit show. Fucking great job for Tom Lennon. On our very first episode of Nerdist Podcast, Tom Lennon, also technically an executive producer of At Midnight and all around good dude. Well, just like when we say EP, like Tom has his own
those
job.
Those checks are real.
He does get real checks. But what a great dude and one of my favorite people to hang around. And he gave us the original Reno pilot.
He's going to make the wedding.
Well,
he's terribly busy.
Yeah, he is.
He has a hit television show on CBS.
But his hit television show isn't on live on Sunday nights. Who gets married on a Sunday night?
Stop promoting Talking Dead.
Yeah,
really I'm just saying, for the other 7 really million of you who can't make it to Matt's wedding, you can watch Talking Dead. Nerds Podcast episode number 659. Katie, roll the thing.
Speedoo-doo-doo.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Wild Stallions.
That's a really, really good shirt.
All of WonderCon, yeah. I was just having a conversation with WonderCon.
I didn't know. You ever find somebody on Twitter that you had no idea was on Twitter? Changes your life? Son of Sven Gulli from Chicago.
Hey, wow.
Son of Sven Gulli would host... he was the guy who hosted, like, Creature from the Black Lagoon.
That's amazing.
Like, Saturday afternoon.
Do you know him?
Chicago. I don't.
Check it out. I bet Dana Gould follows him.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Oh, Dana Gould interviewed all those, like,
I'm on the Sven Gulli now.
And some special. Do you ever see that special? It was on AMC, like, 10,
no.
15. He interviewed all the local, regional, like, horror movie hosts, horror movie TV show hosts.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's how I got to be
like
friends
I met,
with
I feel like I met Elvira one time.
I feel like I met her. Great. She looks great. I just
Always
saw her
good.
At Rob Zombie's
Always
birthday
good.
Party.
Oh, my God. That was the greatest brag of all time. Are we already good recording?
Yeah.
Good. Because that was literally the greatest brag I've ever
heard. I wouldn't have said that unless yeah.
I just ran into
Elvira.
I know. You did.
Chris,
for the character,
like, oh,
Chris, on this show.
Oh, for the character. Hey, Kyle.
Yeah.
Who's wearing a very similar short-sleeve version of Tom's shirt?
I know.
This is weird as a reference.
What a similar closet.
Yeah, Matt and I. Matt and I.
Does anybody want a coffee drink?
I'll take a coffee drink.
Just a black coffee?
Yeah.
I would do a black coffee.
Black coffee?
I'm good, thank you.
Right, well, black coffee in bed.
Did you want Americano or decaf regular coffee?
Just a decaf, whatever you can get. I don't care.
Where your coffee cup was.
How have you been, Tom Lennon?
Are we already going to the podcast?
Yeah, you work more than anyone else.
I work the only person. I only know one person who's busier than me, and that's either you or Aisha Tyler.
Aisha's yeah. really busy too.
She's really busy.
But you, yeah. in addition to. Mm-hmm. Appearing in films and mm-hmm. television as a performer,
yeah.
you also write 100 scripts a week.
But you have to. You know, the thing is, you have to write. I think our ratio, Ben and I were trying to figure out our ratio, and we, as you know, we've got some egregious turds to our credit, and some giant, giant hits. But you really have to write. If you want to get one movie made, write 10 movies. That's the bummer.
And yeah. even then, yeah. it still takes years.
And I don't even mean on spec. I mean, you got to write 10 movies that you sell. Maybe one of them will get through. There's never been an era where they make less movies than they're doing right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess that's true.
Oh, they used to make movies used to come out like every week. There'd be like just a whole slew of movies.
Yeah.
And then they'd stay in the theater for a year.
Big was in the theater for like 9 months.
When we were kids, the whole point of movies is that they'd be out for a year. Yeah. Like if it was good.
Yes, there's no chance of a sleeper hit these days.
No, now you get a weekend and possibly the following Friday for a tiny bit.
Are there the same amount of movies being released, but just a bunch of them are on VOD?
Well, my feeling is, oh, it's funny. We made a VOD movie last year.
Well, oh, Hell Baby.
Hell Baby. Thanks, everybody. Thanks. Yeah. I'm going to hold for the applause.
In my head.
Thanks.
That's exactly how it sounded in my head.
Katie, double this.
There we go. So yeah.
It's just more echoey is the way.
Did I ever tell?
Not my time.
I don't.
Not my time. Clap different.
Not my time.
Catchphrase.
Not my time. Not my time. Not my time. We're all doing whiplash guys to each other.
Not my time.
We put out Hell Baby on VOD.
Yep.
Which was super exciting because the day before it went on VOD, somebody, some friend of ours across the world. Posted the entire film on YouTube in like full 1080 HD.
How?
Jeez.
I don't know. It had the only bummer was that you had to, but it was perfect, crystal clear, but it had Arabic subtitles that you just had to sort of look past. Unless,
that wasn't part of the actual movie?
No, that was not part of the movie.
Oh, then I guess I saw that version.
But it was one of the weirdest, like, proudest moments of my life where I was like, holy cow, somebody stole our movie and put it up on YouTube, and it got 69,000 views in 24 hours.
That's fantastic.
That's great.
With no marketing.
With no marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when people just steal stuff, it's just up. There it is. Yeah.
I mean, if 69,000 mm-hmm. people paid to see your movie, that'd be cool, right?
Wouldn't that be so neat? If they got it on iTunes or whatever.
What are the numbers, by the way? What makes a good VOD? Like what?
Ooh, you know, things have done very well on VOD. I don't know because I've never done one.
Is 100,000 good? Is it a million or 500,000?
You still got to be in the millions, I think.
Yeah. Wow.
Still, I think.
So I'd love to see, like, mm-hmm. you know, like watching what happened with a movie like Babadook. Like, yeah. mm-hmm. is that in the millions or is it like 600,000 or is it, you know,
I think it's wildly fluctuating
like television.
Did millions of people? Well, horror is always different. Horror, like, yeah. everybody watches horror. Those are like kind of the moneymakers.
Not in my experience, not with that movie.
Well, yeah. That's a horror comedy. That's horror comedy, though.
Yeah, well, horror comedy, by the way, which is the genre that everyone says that's impossible. Yeah. But apparently, there's a good one out right now at South by Southwest.
Is that It Follows?
No, I thought it was called...
Oh, It Follows looks really good.
It's been getting great reviews.
It's the one about the New Zealand movie about the family.
What's the Final Girls? Final Girls?
Oh, I don't know.
Is that the one everybody's
know.
Talking about? It's like a... It sounds good.
Yeah. The one girl walks from the horror comedy I saw was takes place in New Zealand, and it's about this girl who gets... she basically gets house arrest with this ankle nice. Bracelet. And
that's a great idea.
And then
it's already a good
she's
idea.
She's kind of a delinquent.
Yeah.
And so she can't leave a perimeter of the house, and all this crazy ghost shit starts happening
oh, nice.
In the house.
Great.
Fuck, what's the movie called?
I watched an entire horror movie. It was a suspense thriller, really, called Crawl Space, starring Jonathan...
Crawl Space with Nick Kroll?
No.
he plays all the characters yeah. in the horror movie?
It's
how you doing? I was down in your crawl space. I don't want to freak you out, but I was just down in your crawl space. Yeah. I was down in the crawl space.
Do I scare you?
It's me. Feel me, Nick Kroll. Crawl space.
But it's crawl space with Jonathan Silverman, Lori Loughlin, the mom and dad.
Don't tell us who's in crawl space.
And Steven Weber.
Steven Weber!
And then who shows up for a little bit before he gets killed? David Koechner.
Kex?
Yeah.
There was a period David Koechner and I have been in more weird crossovers together than we get. Sometimes we get it comes up on IMDb. You have frequently works with used to be a Koechner.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And me and Koechner, there was a period where he and I were just kind of like they'd just rotate us around. Like
yeah.
You know, like a petting zoo pony. They would just kind of rent us out to the
but
shittiest
not in
movies.
Scenes together. You guys have always.
We don't have a lot of scenes together. Yeah. We're usually covering slightly different territory.
All right, I got Tom today. Yeah. I'm going to send you Koechner tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'll trade you a Tom for a Koechner.
Well, he usually has scenes where he's like a crazy old miner or a drifter or a ghost, yeah. and he tells the kids something inspirational, and I'm usually the guy who's like, you nerd, I'm going to get you guys.
The pedophile? Is that
you
what
you did
play?
It now. I mean, of course. That's exactly. That was
gonna,
my pedophile
get
voice,
you guys.
Joe.
God, I'm trying to find this movie because I tweeted about it because it was so much fun.
Oh, but speaking of Koechner, I think the movie him and Pat Healy did, Cheap Thrills, did really well on demand.
You know, I had an audition for that movie that I canceled.
No, which part?
I'm assuming for the Pat's part.
For the Keck part?
Yes, and apparently he's amazing in it and
he's
a career
really
changer and it's like a fantastic thing.
It's an incredible movie.
And I remember thinking... Oh, I don't. It was one of those weird times. I didn't quite read the script, and I was just like, I don't think I'm going to make it to that thing.
Yeah,
it's
real good.
Apparently, it's amazing.
It's really, really
good. Yeah, So there you go.
So your instincts are trying to sabotage your career.
Yep. Yeah.
The movie's called Housebound.
Housebound.
And it was directed by a guy named Gerard Johnstone, and it was really fun.
And just premiered at South by Southwest.
I don't know if it was at South by Southwest. We saw it on maybe iTunes. We just saw it on some VOD. So there's so many VOD services now. There's like. You can and now you can join. I think like Ultraviolet, which is basically
I have an Ultraviolet.
It's like
account.
A storage locker for all
movies.
Well, not all movies, but essentially, like if you go to Flixster or however you purchase films, then I believe Ultraviolet is basically like your shelf where you keep all your videos.
I have the complete Batman series in my Ultraviolet.
Well, you're in a Batman movie.
Different one. I'm talking about the Adam West.
You have the complete.
If you purchase the giant Batman box set, which comes with a little Batmobile, it also plays the Batman. I don't work for these people, by the way.
Right.
It plays the Batman, the old theme song, if you touch the
box. Your instincts told you not to read for it that day.
That was one of those things. I got a note from Pat Healy. He's like, hey, I don't know if you heard, I'm getting amazing reviews for this film, and it's really, really great. And I was like, oh, right. I should have gone in.
But that's the thing, like as a performer, because we're so you never really forget what it was like to not work, and so you have these things when you pass on stuff. You're like, fuck.
I've almost never passed on as you've seen
that
my
was
career.
The thing.
I've almost never passed on anything in my entire life. I passed on Boat Trip, and then they later bugged me and said, will you please come do this one scene in Boat Trip? And I was like, of course I will.
Was that the Cuba Gooding Jr. one?
Yeah, it was Cuba and Horatio Sands.
It was right after Jerry Maguire,
and they pretend to be a gay couple on a cruise?
Accidentally get booked on a gay RSVP cruise. What?
Everybody dance!
I think I'm going to like house sitting.
Give me the music! Yeah.
It was like a bad version. Remember that the brilliant SNL sketch?
Schmitz Gay.
Schmitz Gay. Which was originally Bud Gay, but of course Budweiser said, let's not go
there. And also used to have
their
Van Halen song, but they had to replace it every time.
Boy, we know a lot about the Schmitz Gay commercial.
It's one of the best like fake commercials ever. So this is what we have to house sit all summer? Yeah. And then like when they put the camera down, there's that reaction shot where they both back away.
Schmitz Gay.
I like the...
Yeah, they
tiny detail about the Schmitz Gay commercial on SNL. Joe Latruglio from the state was a PA on that shoot.
No way.
Yeah, I remember.
Really?
I remember he pitched me the idea, and I was like, "Oh, that's funny."
Do you want to come do it? Nah, I'm tired.
Joe Latruglio was briefly a PA on all. Everybody in the state had like sort of.
Did you ever
bad
work on
jobs.
SNL?
I never did. No.
Would you ever? Did you ever want to? I'm sure you
really,
wouldn't now,
really,
but did you want to?
I still. I mean, yes. I mean, it's like one of those things. It's like there's no way around SNL being what it is. Yeah. It was, you know, like.
We
did our own thing, but
I'm surprised the state guys didn't get gobbled up by SNL.
No, not only did we not get gobbled up by SNL,
actively
someone who shall remain nameless was at a party. The problem with the state. One of the things about the
is
great
Michael Showalter.
You gotta put him in that position.
That is not the problem with the state. Some people would say I'm probably the problem with the state. As a matter of fact, because boy, oh boy, do we fight. But when you're in a group with there was 11 of us, and when you're in a group with that many people, it's as if it's like being in a band. But like everyone assumes that you speak on behalf of the organization. So there was some event in New York where. One member of the state was basically just shitting on SNL. But this was during a not amazing stretch of SNL. There was like, you know, some ups and downs.
Okay, so Mike Black was shitting on SNL.
It wasn't Michael Black.
We're just going through everybody.
John Hollebeck destroyed SNL.
Michael Patrick Jan was sick.
It wasn't.
Shit, damn it, Kevin Allison.
Kevin Allison! So Kerry Kinney, we're going to find it.
Yeah.
No, so... all we heard later, like years later, we heard like from some SNL people because I always liked SNL and we were always, you know, I had never had any issue. We thought we were going to like, you know, be their great rival or something, you know. But we heard years later from somebody at SNL, they're like, oh yeah, the state guys, they hate us. And we're like, who said that? Like, oh no, one of you. One of you said it very specifically.
That person doesn't speak for the group.
Yeah, that's a problem. But
here's a chart. Let me explain the factions.
We did so many dumb things that we had to apologize for. We all pulled down our pants at the 21 Club. The state.
What is that?
The state was. We were just. God, we were so full of ourselves.
Well, I think it's the punk. It's sort of like the punk counterculture comedy movement when like young comedy people, 18, 19, 20, 21.
come in and it's sort of like, yeah, we're going to fucking tear everything down.
We thought we were the Sex Pistols. I mean, we were. So we went.
How could you know? You were young and you had a TV show.
There was a William Morris party at the 21 Club, which I'd never been to in my entire life. It's,
this whole sentence is amazing.
So
there was a William Morris party.
There was a William Morris party at the 21 Club, which I'd only heard about because Grace Kelly in Rear Window says, if Johnny can't go to the 21 Club, the 21 Club shall come to Johnny. And had never been, couldn't afford it, didn't know where it was. But they're like, do you want to come to the 21 Club? And the state would do what we would always do, which is come in and get fucked up and get hammered on strong alcohol and ruin it for everybody. So so we went in, and it was I think it was Ken Marino started. The first thing I did was there was all these name tags out for people that were going to be at the event. So oh, I no. took Regis Philbin's. Just to be an asshole. I was like wearing Regis Philbin's. We're all like smoking cigarettes. The state was a heavy smoking group at the time. And we're just like standing around smoking at the 21 Club. And I can't remember if it was Michael Ian Black or Ken Marino was the first one to pull his pants down around his ankles. But then we all did.
Like dicks out?
No. We all kept our underwear on. And I think it was this is sort of the tidy whitey era. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really a super sexy kind of scene. But we all pulled our pants around our ankles, and we stood in the middle of the 21 Club and had a very heavy, like, conversation. And we tried to act as serious as we could. And at a certain point, one of the, like, the maitre d' or the captain of the 21 came over and said, gentlemen, please, it's the 21 Club. And then we all felt like jerks, and... I guess I can probably say this because the statute of limitations has expired on this. But then Ben Garant stole a painting. Ben Garant went into the bathroom of the 21 Club. And I'll say this now, he's a good friend. We've done a lot of work together. But he straight up took a nice, like, a painting of a horse. Jesus. Off of the wall.
How did he get it out?
He shoved it into his pants. He didn't get out. He was immediately... he was immediately caught. So, like, I've got the Regis Philbin name tag on. We've all got our pants around our ankles. The next thing that happens is a crime, possibly a felony.
The one guy with his pants up has a painting in it.
Has a shove.
That was the problem.
A beautiful oil painting of like a thoroughbred into his pants. At this point, like, it escalates. And they're like, gentlemen, we're calling the police.
No.
And we all freak out. And Ben, gave, of course, pulled the painting out of his pants and gave it back. If you go in the men's room of the 21 Club, you can still see. Look at a portrait of a horse's face. And if you see and think it'll fit in Ben Garant. Ben, he's a small guy. He's got a tiny waist. So probably one of the smaller.
But there's just an imprint of Ben's dick on his face. He's just like.
Yeah. So that was a. That evening, and then, of course, Ben had to write. I'm not sure. Did we all have to write apologies to...
Jesus.
We had to apologize to the William Morris Agency.
Sure.
We had to write apologies to the president of the William Morris Agency, which, if you've never, as an adult man, had to write an apology letter to another adult man...
It's weird.
It's weird.
It is weird.
It doesn't feel great.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it. The antics aren't worth it.
No.
When you were riding away from the 21 Club, was it silent in the car, or were you like, we did it?
No, we ran. We didn't get in the car for... There was 12 years in New York. I remember we were running down the street still carrying glasses with drinks in them from the 21 Club as we were running away, probably screaming.
So the place is still open.
21 Club is still there, believe it or not. But the state, this is a good episode to tell just like weird, crazy state.
Sure, please.
These are the kind of people that we were in the state. We walked outside of a bar called The Dugout. Kevin Allison used to go into the bathroom of The Dugout and take off all his clothes. Except, I guess, his shoes. And then he would come dancing out of the bathroom. One of the first nights we ever hung out with Kevin... It was a place we would go there because you could get like a $3 pitcher of Budweiser, which is why if you Google old pictures of my face, something's not right.
Yeah.
It's just something.
You're basically Mr. Kool-Aid, but with beer.
Oh, yeah.
So we would go drink at The Dugout, and then Kevin Allison would before we knew that he was going to have like the Risk podcast and be a, an instructor at kink camp and stuff, you know, like that, he would just take off all his clothes and then he'd come he'd come dancing out. It's like, I think might have been the first night we ever hung out. He danced completely nude out of the bathroom, singing a song that everyone in the state still remembers because it was it made a distinct impression. But he came out and, he sang, "Standing in an inch of urine well becomes a sailor man." And then I believe he said, "Never mind my gerbil penis." And and danced around, and we were like, "All right. We have found our Graham Chapman." Apparently. We're like, you're with us. Yep. Two guys who got into the state both by working the lighting board, Kevin Allison and Tom Lennon.
Really?
The secret way to get into the state was you had to be on the crew. You had to be a roadie for a while.
And then you slid your way in.
And then
were you pitching sketches or did you just start appearing on stage and no one said don't be on stage?
You know what was what was insane is I was a replacement member of the state. I was not a first year member because, there was 11 of them and one guy quit and they thought, God forbid we lose another, doughy white guy.
Right.
Let's make sure we squeeze one more dude into
right.
this group.
Right.
A sketch troupe could function with only 10 people.
with only one girl and 9 almost identical white guys. What would we ever have done? Yeah. So, a guy who's still a pretty good friend of mine, quit the state, and it's strange because it changed mine.
What was your
life.
First sketch?
The first sketch I wrote, and I remember Ken Marino looking at me like he wanted to kill me. It was so bad. Okay, here's what it was.
Okay,
it was called "The Dream Isthmus," and it was basically a parody of Fantasy Island where very reasonably priced dreams could come true. And the
this still strikes
was,
me as Tom's sense of humor.
It was "Welcome to the Dream Isthmus." And it was like somebody, she wants to be a substitute teacher. It was all just stuff that
just
was
so practical. it's an isthmus.
Yeah, with an isthmus. And I remember Michael Ian Black was glaring at me, and Ken Marino was glaring. Everybody was just glaring at me. That was a great thing about the state, though. It was great practice for being in the movie business, because as a writer in the studio system, every day you're in rooms full of people pitching them ideas, and they're glaring at you like they want to kill you. So it was
when you originally pitched to Ben Stiller, "Night at the Isthmus," we should make it a museum. It's like you're just constantly trying to get isthmus into it.
It was funny. I wrote a Baywatch spoof in the state that Jim Sharp, who's a great executive at Comedy Central and produced The State and Viva Variety and Overseas at Midnight now still, Jim Sharp would grade our sketches and hand them back to us in the state.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think he handed me back a Baywatch sketch I had written with a D. But he would literally, it was like, he would do things like see me or you'd get like a check and a plus check.
Did you get a smiley face? Like,
no, on that one I got
nice work.
A for effort.
Once in a while, but I got a lot of D's and stuff. And I remember I wrote a Baywatch spoof sketch that was about guys pretending like they couldn't breathe to get CPR, and Jim was just like, this is terrible. This is bad work.
So working in the state helped keep your ego in check when you started working in film, that you wouldn't, like, you pitch stuff and people are like, that's terrible, and you're like, fine, here's another idea.
I don't care. Yeah. Because it was like, we'd been like Max Cady in prison. That's what the state was. Just like doing chin-ups.
Yep.
And shooting
just
down
getting
each other's,
ready.
Just shooting down each other's ideas.
Yep.
Shooting down. People still give Mike Showalter shit about a sketch he wrote called "Wine Heist." And I don't know why. Oh, by the way, the reason I was telling the Baywatch thing is Ben and I then wrote the Baywatch movie last year. So we actually, like, it was, I got a D on my Baywatch sketch.
But it became a movie.
But that's the great thing about us. As soon as we get back in a room together, it could be 25 years later, but people will make fun of a sketch that you wrote 25 years ago, and they mean it.
Do you think do you think the ego is the biggest? It's weird because I feel like you'd need enough of an ego to feel like something I do could be worthwhile enough that someone would make it. Mm-hmm. But if you have even slightly too much, then you'll just get caught in the gears of Hollywood and spat out into a heap.
You know, that's a piece of advice that we give in the screenwriting book that we wrote, which is if obviously you need a ton of self-confidence, tons, and you need to make your own decisions and move fast and not wait for people's approval. That said, once you've done those things, you have to be able to detach yourself from what people are saying about you and notes and the insanity of the system. I mean, you have to be able to not... If you're going to take things personally, you just won't make it at this. You just won't. It's too hurtful. Hmm. The odds against you are... Oh, my God. So... hang on a second. I'm trying to remember I was walking across a lot and Sam Waterston was on the lot, and Sam Waterston had played my dad in a movie, and I was walking with a guy that I'm writing a movie for, and Sam Waterston asked me. He said, "When did you quit acting and start writing?" And I said, "Sam, I've never quit acting. It's just..." Acting is such an unreliable profession. And Sam Waterston says, "You're telling me." And I was like, okay, the workingest actor in the history.
How long was he on Law and Order?
Of the world.
Yeah.
When I said acting is an unreliable profession, he was like, "Oh, you're telling me."
Yeah.
Yeah. Sam Waterston.
That who was he on 20 years of Law and Order?
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
That reminds me of the behind the and inside of the actor studio with Gene Wilder, when he ran into Cary Grant and Cary Grant was heaping praise on him for Silver Streak, and Cary Grant goes,
yeah.
"I mean, it's a wonderful film. You take an ordinary chap like you or me and put him in a crazy situation," like, and Gene Wilder's like you or me,
like you or me,
like you or me, in that. Pan-Atlantic yeah. accent.
You take an ordinary chap.
Take
like
an ordinary chap like the two
me.
Of us.
Like you all me.
He's just breaking down any comedy, too. That's just any comedy.
Ordinary chap.
By the way, what if Silver Streak had been Cary Grant and Richard Pryor? That would have been amazing.
That would have... Yeah. I'm just an ordinary chap.
Look, a couple of ordinary chaps. You teach me how to walk jive. Right? You teach me this said jive walk. Yes.
So I've put this shoe polish on my face. Yes. To fit in.
Very good. Very good.
No.
Very good.
No, not okay.
Speaking of Gene Wilder, recently I don't know if it was a good parenting decision or not. I mean, you make a lot of weird parenting decisions. There was one night I had like a weird flu, and Jenny had stuff she had to do, so I had my son, and I was like, he can watch Batman Begins, right? And he was like,
"How old is he now?"
He's now five, but this was at about two and a half.
Okay,
I just wasn't thinking. I was maybe a little bit feverish, you know. But you kind of forget. For example, they murder Bruce Wayne's parents in front of him.
Oh yeah,
yeah. But yeah. I remember that kind of as it was happening.
You kind of forget. Yeah.
Is that when Ollie became an idea?
He became an idea. He became something more than a man, something that men fear.
That was.
I got him out, but I take him out in the back and I just put him in a bucket full of possums. There's a solid chance he might not be the hero of his story.
Isn't that also the name of your blues album? Bucket Full of Possums.
Bucket Full of Possums. Bucket Full of Possums.
And you got to blow purple flowers
in his
becoming,
face. He's becoming an idea.
Yeah.
The idea is a whole bunch of possums.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You, I think Ollie might be the official Nerdist podcast baby because
I believe he is.
He is almost the exact age of the podcast.
That's right. Right.
When we came over to do our very first podcast at your place.
My wife and I were making love.
What?
As soon as I high-fived you, I ran in, we made love and made a baby.
That was it. Right there. No, I think he was born.
He was born
at
he
that
was just
point.
Tiny baby.
Tiny baby.
We were whispering out in the back.
Still a new thing.
Yeah. Wow. But then I recently let him watch, I was like, is Young Frankenstein a good idea with a little kid? And the answer is, it's a great idea. Great.
Very physical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great idea. Ollie got to meet Mel Brooks.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if you know this. Mel Brooks is frequently out. He's a horse racing enthusiast.
Yes.
So he and Dick Van Patten are often out at Santa Anita, in the very nice section, where there's like the beautiful table.
Where he was with Mickey Rooney a few days before Mickey Rooney passed.
So are you saying he killed him?
Obviously.
Yes.
You're saying...
I'm saying horse racing is a very stressful endeavor.
Why did they... Why...
I'm just saying, yeah. Where was Robert Durst?
You're saying... Why is not...
Look, I mean, I happen to be staying across the street from Santa Anita.
I don't know why Robert Durst, I've turned him into Gary Marshall.
My sister Penny said that I should go murder my mob... The friend of the mobster's blink, daughter.
Blink, Gary Marshall is blink, now blink. My good friend, by the way.
Is he really?
We're now like...
That's awesome.
We're like pals. That's I got great. The holiday card.
Oh yeah, he must still be involved somehow in the Odd Couple.
I never thought that he would really be involved in the Odd Couple, because you see somebody's name on something, you think, like, boom, rubber stamp, they're not going to. He's at every single taping. He's always there. He That's stands like right at my shoulder, awesome. Like a gargoyle. gives me all kinds of notes. But we're like, how do I describe this? We're
kind of
like bros.
You know, holiday cards is kind of, that's when you kind of reality check how weird your life is getting in the humble braggiest way.
Yeah.
But it's, a couple years ago on my refrigerator, I stood back and I'm like, there's a holiday card from Pee Wee Herman, Weird Al, and Yoda.
You did it.
And,
how did you get a Yoda card?
A Yoda card.
From Lucasfilm.
Wow. I haven't made
they
that
didn't
list
send
yet.
It for, did they send it for Life Day, or was it for Christmas?
It was for Christmas, and it was Yoda, like, in a Santa hat.
Wow.
And
I get the Paul Rubens. We're on the Paul Rubens list. We're on the Weird Al list.
Did you write something for Mad for Al?
I did.
I did, too.
Yeah, I did.
That was another weird thing. So is it like a 13-year-old me, like, the magic of those things. Someday, Weird Al Yankovic's going to ask you to write for Mad Magazine. Yeah, that blew
it officially blew my mind.
Mine, too.
Well, the other thing is about it. Here's the scariest thing about that. You ready?
Yep.
Get a call. Weird Al calls, or it was an email, I guess, but it calls. Says, do you want to write something for Mad Magazine? And I was like, yeah, sure. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, yeah, I'm so dead inside now that the greatest thing in the world could happen to me. And I'd be like, yeah, sure.
Well, I think,
yeah, okay.
Wasn't it Bill Maher who said that, I think he said he realized he had made it when he got the call for his show. And he was like, okay.
Yeah. You know, I had this conversation with Ken Marino yesterday. And because he's got a show that's doing well, and Odd Couple's doing really well. And I was like, hey, how you feeling? He's like, I don't really feel anything. I was like, I don't either. And then we figured out, and we figured out why, which is, if you're an actor, you've literally had a quarter century of almost nothing but disappointment
and
at every single turn. You get rejected so much that you build up this like suit of armor. That eventually you just don't really feel anything.
Well, it basically you've been to take out the lows, you also kind of scrape off the highs,
of course,
too.
Yeah.
Especially because you just you're so conditioned of the impermanence of what we do that even when you're on a hit show, you're like, but it's not. Yeah. I mean, it could go away tomorrow. So like who knows?
You must be excited, right? No, I don't know. The TV show I'm on right now was the number five show last week on TV.
That's fucking insane.
Someone must feel that, right?
So you feel it if you really reflect on it.
For a couple seconds, I feel it, and then it goes away.
Do you get recognized more now because of the show than you ever did?
It's a different crowd. I've had
older crowd probably.
It's an older crowd and a younger crowd. The only thing that was different is occasionally. Like I went to Disneyland with Ollie. Occasionally people start taking pictures surreptitiously of you, which was weird. That was that's never happened. When I was Lieutenant Dangle, that never happened.
Unless you got into Lieutenant Dangle.
I was approachable. Now I'm so unapproachable. Well, I'm in a mink, obviously.
Of course.
The same mink that I'm wearing right now.
Yeah.
Odd. And then it's 90 degrees today. He's still wearing a mink.
And then
it's so they know, Matt.
This is not a
so
crown, by the way. This is just a very, very fancy beret.
It's a beret made of jewels. So I can understand why you would think it's a crown.
People feel like it looks like a crown, but it's just...
You know, it's funny because...
It's just a very expensive beret.
You came on at midnight, I think, the week after Odd Couple premiered.
Yeah.
And I said, how's the show going? And you go, some of the reviews were shit, but the show debuted at millions of people watched it, so who gives a fuck?
Yeah, it's like 13 million people. But in fact, here's what's weird about me and reviews. I've done like culty stuff. I'm not sure what the plan was. I've literally never done anything in my entire life that got really good reviews, except for the screenwriting book.
Right.
But like the stuff that I do that I feel like is like totally culty, and The State... When The State came out, when we thought we were the Sex Pistols and the greatest thing that ever happened to comedy, we got a negative 1.5 stars in the New York Post.
Stars away
the New York Post gave The State negative 1.5
stars. They had to draw another star to the left.
Yeah. It's actually a piece of paper from the newspaper came out just to go the other
way. That's incredible.
The morning that the state premiered on MTV in 1993 or 94 or whatever it was, we all got up to do like a radio interviews together. So we went out to New Jersey in the morning to this place, this radio station, and our very first one, it was like 5 o'clock in the morning, and 11 of us, and a guy, it was a guy from the Tampa Power Pig was on the other end of the line. And he's like, hey, you're talking to the Power Pig in Tampa. And he's like, hey, you guys are a comedy group called The State out of New York City. Got a show on MTV tonight. That's great. Have you read your review in the USA Today yet?
Good.
Oh, no.
It's 5 o'clock in the morning. And we're like, you know, optimistic, all kind of like looking around at each other like, hey, we're in the USA Today.
I mean, why would he ask if it wasn't Glowing Ryu?
Why would you ask a bunch of people on your morning radio show on the Power Pig at 5 o'clock in the morning? He then read to us one of the meanest. It was unbelievable. Like, we were all standing there and you could just watch all of our faces as he was like, so it goes on to say, every MTV executive that greenlit this series should be given a urine test, which was an actual quote.
Says the guy who works at the Power Pig.
So the guy from the Power Pig. And then he ended the interview with, guys, and I don't want you to forget my name. It's spelled exactly like this. One of you write it down, okay? HayWoodJablome. Heywood, Jablome.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And then he hung up on us. And that was our first day in show business.
What?
Our first day.
You got gang jumped.
Our first official day in show business was a dude from the Power Pig in Tampa telling us to blow him. Reading us a bad review, then he hung up on us.
He might still be at the Power Pig.
He probably is. God bless. He's a good friend now. That's the other thing about don't carry grudges.
You, Gary Marshall, and the Power Pig.
Tom, I was wondering if I could get the Power Pig's address. I want to send him a holiday
Power Pig.
Card.
Power Pig's making their call.
My sister Penny loves the Power Pig.
Hey, what your guy named Heywood Jablome? That's a good bit, by the way.
Real good bit.
I think just so people understand, it's not that. You don't appreciate stuff when it happens. It's just you get so battle-scarred from putting out fires, putting out fires, putting out fires, putting out fires.
That when something good happens,
rejection,
it's hard.
Rejection, rejection, rejection. You're just like, yeah, great,
right,
great. Let's just fucking do this.
Because your guard's up all the time. You're so used to just getting like hit with bike chains and
I
stuff.
I really do take moments to go, hey, no, this is rad. Like this thing that you wanted.
Yeah, look at you. You got a hit show.
It's happening.
That must feel like something, right?
Yeah, well, there's it does.
Yeah.
It does.
For a minute. Yeah.
5.9 million people watched Talking Dead last night, a show about a zombie show.
Is that more than The Zombie Show?
And it's not. No, The Zombie Show is like 14 million.
Oh, amazing.
Wow, what a drop off. I wouldn't overthink it, though.
Hey, why would you?
That's a lot.
No, that's a good.
It's like 9 million people just turning it off.
That's a good audience retention, though.
It's best not to think about these things.
No, that's
best not to think about it.
It's just kind of weird. Just like, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, I know, but
they obviously care what you're already going to talk about.
Well, right, but I mean.
And they just saw people being torn apart and eaten alive, and that they can't even just wait a little bit to watch.
I'm sorry, but I stopped thinking when I realized that The Odd Couple does about basically the same numbers as The Walking Dead. I stopped listening to this entire conversation. So whatever problems you guys are having personally, I actually felt good for one second, and I guess that's how you have to feel. The way we feel good in show business is to compare yourself to other people. Is compare yourself to other
people trying to be better than their friends.
But I think it is important to because you're so much in short term mode, which is like I said, just dealing with whatever you can accomplish in each minute, and especially with you who are still writing scripts.
Oh yeah.
I
have a pitch after this.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I go from here to a pitch. But the other thing is, like, you know, the goalposts are always getting moved. And it was so funny because I was like, woo, I got a hit show. This is great. Because I've, been on culty shows most of my life. And then, like, the day after we did, like, our greatest number ever on the TV show, like, I had an audition where I was signed in with every guy I know. It was just like, for like three scenes in a movie. It's like nothing. There was no like, please come play the weird gynecologist that you always play. No, there's no offer. Like it's always the hoops. You're gonna always jump through hoops.
Do you think you need to always feel like you're doing that, or do you feel like if you get comfortable, then it's gonna go away?
I wonder. I don't know. You know, that's an interesting thing. I've never gotten quite comfortable, and I don't think you really do either, do you?
No, yeah. it's hard to get yeah. comfortable. Actually, I've been feeling kind of weird lately, and I realized it's my body getting comfortable, mm-hmm. and it makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Getting into a comfortable situation. It's yeah. like,
what do you mean your body getting?
But you have
comfortable?
Two television shows.
My what?
What do you mean by your body getting mm-hmm. comfortable?
I mean, no, I mean my circumstances are comfortable
uh-huh.
in the sense that At Midnight's up and running.
Yeah.
Talking Dead's up and running. Neither of those are going away anytime soon. Podcast is up and running.
Yeah.
Stand tour's booked through the end of the year. Got a like the nicest girlfriend in the world. I mean, like, it's everything around
by
me.
By the way, yeah, well, go ahead.
No, I was just saying everything's very comfortable. Yeah. It's like all the circumstances are comfortable, and that makes me feel uncomfortable because I'm not used to
but
it.
But then I saw you the other Saturday coming out of the boxing gym. So what is it about you, Clarice? That why must you go? Who are you fighting at the boxing gym?
Well, to be fair, boxing is just one small part.
It's a young boy.
Who are you punching?
Out. Who is he punching, Clarice?
Would you like to punch someone who is about your own weight here on the Isthmus of Dreams?
Speaking of, this is an awkward question.
I've
had this conversation with Matt Myra. What do you guys... Matt Myra's the guy with the beard, right?
Yeah.
The thicker beard.
Yeah. The beard's name is Dory.
Slam dunk from that was way literally that was like when you get fouled and you're shooting a 3-point shot, so you get to shoot.
Yeah,
it's
a 4-point play.
It's a 4-point play. Here's the etiquette question.
Yeah,
when is it appropriate to unfollow somebody's ex-girlfriend on Twitter? Because
Tom's had this conversation twice with
we've
me.
Had this conversation a couple of times where it's like, okay, you met a girl, you really liked her, you made me friends with her, now I follow her on Twitter. I never wanted to follow her on Twitter, but now I do. Like, what's the window that you allow?
I think immediately is fine.
You unfollow immediately.
Well, I just think, I think if you're not friends with that person.
Okay, I gotta unfollow a couple of your exes then.
if you're friends with someone, I mean, if you become friends with that person, I think it's weird to get territorial and be like, but if you didn't really know that person very well outside of the relationship, I don't think it's weird.
You don't think it's weird?
No, I mute him for a couple months and then I go back and clean house.
Mute him for a couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's weird.
It's not weird.
No. Okay.
I don't think so.
And Myra's really put me through the ringer on this a couple of times.
I'm committing.
We go out to a Korean restaurant, and he's like, this is the one.
Yeah. Everyone,
fool me three times.
I don't think I've ever said this is the one.
So no, have you not unfollowed his girlfriend yet?
No, I unfollowed a couple of Myra's. Yeah. I might be talking about one of yours that maybe.
Oh, gotcha.
But it's like it's weird. It's awkward. They follow you and you're like, oh, right, follow back.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think if your only way in was that one friend and you're not really friends with the other person, I don't think it's weird.
Yeah. Do you guys notice I've been accidentally, and maybe it's the new...
Following people?
Yes.
Yes.
Has everybody been doing this?
Yes.
It's a real problem. I have accidentally followed about 20 people in the past month, and they're all really nice.
And you feel bad about unfollowing them.
I can't do it now.
I don't do it.
Just when they call you out on it. They know it was a mistake to follow them, but you unfollow them. They go, oh, thanks for following and unfollowing.
So
I don't immediately unfollow them. They will tweet for a couple months, oh my God, Matt Myra's following me, and then I just go, all right, that's it. But, I guess I'm following
you
now.
So the idea of the follow the person button on the bottom of every single tweet was a weird idea, don't you think?
Yes.
Well, I use Tweetbot, which is a different... Which is a different Twitter app.
My noise delivery is here.
Oh, good.
I had a bunch of noise delivered here. I hope that's okay.
I got a noise delivery for Jonah Ryan.
That's me. You guys better wear these.
He's a very quiet delivery man. He's like Whisper and Living Like That.
Jesus Christ.
What on earth is happening out there?
Donkey Kong.
That's Robert Durst is making a new friend.
Kyle goes black bloodied.
Yeah. I don't think
it's happening. Stop. I don't think he wants to stop.
They breached the building.
They breached the building.
Secure the perimeter.
Why did you unfollow his ex?
Why did you unfollow?
She's here. How'd that work out? Nope, didn't work out.
All the last pieces going down.
What was that?
That's just they were unloading all the office upstairs, so it's just all the furniture in that room was coming down.
Oh, and so what did they do? Shove it down the stairs?
Actually, yes. Happens, man.
They're just pushing furniture down the stairs.
We might have made it worse.
Well, they just found out Jesse was canceled on the Disney Channel. They gotta move everything out.
They gotta move her. There's a ton of Disney shows on this lot.
Yeah, it's a crazy lot.
Yeah, this is a crazy lot, but it's got great history.
Yeah, it
great,
does.
Great history. Viva Variety's final season was
what?
Shot right here.
Nice.
Yeah, my parking space at Viva Variety was very close to here. Not to brag, kids.
That is a huge brag.
Yeah. Viva Variety is a show that no one remembers.
I remember Viva Variety. Yeah. I love Viva Variety. Great. Johnny Blue Jeans.
That was on. I used to watch it at my grandmother's house all the time on Sundays for some reason.
I just remember my friend Tom.
By the way, I'm going to unfollow your grandma on Twitter now.
Yeah.
Okay. No, don't. She's very vindictive.
She died long before Twitter.
Viva Variety, I'm actually surprised there hasn't been something else that kind of lampoons Sabado Gigante or those types of.
Right. That's what, for people who never saw it, it was basically like a fake. Like if you ever go to Europe and like you have jet lag and then you turn on the TV and there's like a game show where there's like a topless lady and like a goat and everything, everybody's screaming and you can't quite tell if it's real or if it's a sketch. That's what Viva Variety.
That's what Sabado Gigante was too. Yeah. Sabado Gigante. It's on Telemundo or Univision.
Yeah.
And it is like a multi-tool of a show where there's a game show element and sketch comedy, and then all of a sudden the audience breaks into song and they're singing the
Don Francisco.
Sponsorship.
It's also like
Don Francisco.
It's also like 4 hours long.
It's the longest show ever.
If we ever redid Viva Variety, we wanted to do a show with Toby Huss, who does a character called Rudy Cassoni.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Rudy Cassoni's a great character.
And my pitch for that was, what if it was a telethon every week? So there's literally just people sitting at a bank of phones.
That's so funny.
And you just are doing.
It's like the last
the show
hour
is
of
just
a 12 hour.
Like you've been on a marathon and just people can. Yeah.
That's a great idea.
But Viva Variety was a lot. We had a lot of fun. And a lot of interesting people on that show.
How many pitches do you think, as many things as you've gotten greenlit, is it 10 to 1?
How many things? TV-wise?
TV, film.
TV-wise. Movie-wise, we're probably running at about, for every 8 scripts, that we sell to movie studios and write for them, maybe we get 1 out of 8 made, something like that. TV-wise, we've done a couple different things. We did a bunch of pilots that have failed. A bunch. But this is a good thing to learn about. Dust yourself off and get back up again. Because Reno 911 was thrown together over a weekend because we were in 2000, 3 years before it came on the air. We were doing a sketch comedy, just a straight up sketch pilot for Fox, no twist. It was we had cast it. We had Cedric and Nisi and Carlos, and Ben and I had written. We wrote like 90 sketches and then honed it down to like the best 10, 12, 15 sketches. And we were really proud of it. And we went in and did a table read like the week before we were going to start shooting. And Gail Berman, who was the president of Fox at the time, pulled the plug in the room.
Holy shit.
What?
She was like, that was all funny, but here's the thing, guys. I don't know. I don't see any reason to do a sketch show. Like it's the opposite of why people watch TV. You know, sketch shows are. People watch TV to see characters they love doing in new situations or in situations where they get to, surprise your expectations. And then the other thing she said was, and by the way, this was the year 2000. So I was 30. She was like, we don't need a sketch show, and we sure don't need a sketch show with such a mature cast.
Oh, wow. Wow.
We're like, whoa. And I was like, wait, I'm 30. And they're like, no, we were old and not needed.
Oh my God.
So we basically, the plug was pulled, but we had Cedric and Carlos and Nisi and Carrie and Ben and me. And over the weekend, we're like, well, shit, we have a crew and we have funny people. We're like, what if we shot something else? You know, what if we just like turned in an extra credit pilot and see if we could get anything picked up? And the sketch show was supposed to be for Saturday nights on Fox. And it would have been immediately basically following Cops. So we're like, what if we just spoofed Cops? What if we did a cop spoof where everything is sketches? But the insane thing about that was in the pilot, which you might be able to find somewhere. Maybe I could secretly leak it to Nerdist at some point.
Please.
Because I have it.
Please.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Play all of the perps and all of the cops.
Oh, wow.
So it was basically like Little Britain.
Oh, like Kroll Show. Little Britain.
Like Kroll Show.
Yeah. Like Kroll Show.
Yeah. So we all, we come up to crimes where we are also all the perps. We just had like a bag of mullets.
Please let us post that. That'd be amazing.
I'd love to see that.
I will absolutely give it to you.
That'd be amazing. And so did you give that to Fox or did
we
you?
Turn it into Fox and did not make the cut. It was told it was a little too gay. Because at the end of the last call of the episode is Dangle has pulled over a trainer, and it's all shot from the dash cam. And the trainer is played by Ben Grant, my writing partner. And we just were talking. I'm like, wow, this is your driver's license. Wow, you just, well, you don't look like you weigh 138. And then he has me doing push-ups, and then it ends with us straight up just making out. For like it keeps dissolving, and we get closer and closer and closer. And, we were told, their guys, like, guys, you got to tone this down. It's insane. And we're like, you know what? Fuck you. We're not going to tone it down. That's, we like it.
Good for,
like,
you.
Great. We're not picking it up.
So how did it get to Comedy Central?
Sat on the shelf at Fox for 3 years.
Oh, fuck.
No one ever mentioned it. Nobody talked about it. Ben and I went and tried some other pilots and things. And then Jim Sharp came to us and he's like, do you guys have a show that's really, really cheap you could do? And we're like, hey, what about the one where we're pretend cops? And they saw it and they're like, great. The only thing is you can't play the perps too. That's insane and it's really weird and nobody likes it. So we phased out us playing the criminals. But yeah, that was one of those weird things where
the
just
characters,
like,
are pretty much there.
What was it called?
It was called Reno 911.
Oh, it was Reno 911.
Actually, when it was at Fox, this was insane. They made us turn it back in. They wanted it to change every week. Like, 1 week we'd be ambulance drivers, and then we'd be lawyers. So it was called Viva Variety Presents Reno 911. I don't know why. It was insane.
Now, didn't Gail Berman had just say, like, people like to see the same characters?
I know. It was insane.
Okay.
So anyway, but that's the thing. And then we just wrote a movie for her last year. So it's like, you know what? Don't hold any grudges in this.
No. There's no point. Because memories are short unless you're addicted to people.
So short.
Yep. If you're addicted to people, memories are very long. People will remember for decades that were shitty to them.
Let's go through some other big, big flops. We did a pilot for NBC called The Strip.
I remember. Yeah.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
It was about, like, my character had wanted to open a sort of a nice restaurant in North Las Vegas. But it turns out nobody wanted a nice restaurant. So basically it just kept devolving. The restaurant over like a year had basically turned into like a Hooters from like a sort of a nice like bistro. And the pilot of that one was people were throwing chicken bones on the floor.
Instead of penises.
And it was getting really so disgusting. And I was like, well, this is horrifying. And they're like, well, you can throw peanut shells. And it's like, well, that's an exoskeleton. That's not. So it was, and Natasha Leggero was in that. And basically I put up a bell over a garbage can was my like amazing workaround to get people to whip their bones and put a bell. And then NBC was like, this is so really gross. Like, can we change it? Like, this is the whole pilot.
By the way, Jonah, I read, because I was performing in St. Louis, so I couldn't go to the Justin Bieber roast. But I had read, and then you told me separately that Natasha fucking destroyed.
It was incredible. It was the best set of the entire night.
No surprise.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Isn't that fun when your friends, people that you know are so fucking funny, and then all of a sudden the rest of the world starts figuring it out, and you're like, yes, this is what I was saying.
Yeah, me and Matt were talking about it earlier, and she's in a great position too because it's like she's not that well known as like a celebrity of any sort. And so the only jokes that people were able to throw at her were – because she's a woman, that she's a whore or a slut, which, like, you know, is not the case. So she's not affected by them. So she just, you know, sits there poised as fuck, just looking gorgeous, and then just goes up on the stage and just decimates everybody.
She's been in every pilot we've ever done.
Yeah. Yeah. She's incredible.
We did
the space one, right?
We did the space one. I'm really proud of, too.
She's such a good joke writer.
Can I give the space one to you? Will I get in trouble for that? At some point, I'll leak you all this stuff.
Please.
But I'll start with the Reno. The Reno pilot where we play everybody is weird.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah.
I also have the script. That's a great idea. Cool. Yeah, secret leaks. The WikiLeaks.
Hard WikiLeaks.
Hard WikiLeaks.
Branded.
Hey, get the URL. .gov, .org, .tv, .biz.
Pizza.
Hard WikiLeaks.
But we did a show. It was basically just Reno 911 in a horrible spaceship. And it was just called Alabama, which was the name. The ship was called the USS Alabama. This one was so... I played acting captain Glenn Frenchman.
Mm-hmm.
Natasha Leggero was a sex robot that we had been issued, but we'd been in space for 6 years with her. So we were all over the idea of having sex with her a long time ago. And now she was basically kind of like our girlfriend that we couldn't quite break up with. And she was going to tell us about when she's not a sex robot anymore, she's going to get a real estate license.
I want to see this.
Alabama. Ben Grant played a robot. Rob Hubel played the ship's sniper. Mindy Sterling was our doctor, who I had a bit of an affair with. And the pilot episode, we get sucked down to a planet by Eddie Izzard.
Oh, wow.
Who is like a super brilliant being, and he wants to test us to see what human beings are capable of. Like, will we choose which one of us to die, which we do in like 1 second. And it was, I was really proud of that one too. That one, I mean, this is the thing, is just dust yourself off. Cause I was like, whenever you think you're like, I know I was right this time. Nope.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's crazy is that these networks, I feel like they're sitting on potential gold mines. Like they should be, they, you know, like someone like Fox should make a deal with Netflix or Hulu and just basically have like a pilot channel. And like, these are a bunch of pilots that we made and one of them will catch on.
Well, what's interesting is that there's never been the technology to put that out like there is now with like Netflix and stuff.
Right.
But yeah, we have some weird stuff. You know who should put it out?
Hard WikiLeaks.
What? I would love to, because I guarantee you there are things in there that some network executive was wrong about or was in a bad mood the day they screened it, and some potentially gargantuan hit got squashed.
The other thing that they probably have in common is a lot of them were too weird, you know, which is like kind of good.
This is kind of perfect.
Yeah.
That'd
be
great.
It's so weird, though. It's just like to like be in a creative field and then working so hard to like make something, and then someone else says, well, we don't want to use it. They're like, okay, cool. Well, can we have it back? No, we're just going to – that painting you worked really hard on, we're just going to put it in a vault.
No, I'm going to sit on it.
No, I'd rather – it's like I worked really hard on it. I'd like to show people the painting. No, I'd rather you not.
Then I have
Are you going to show anyone? No.
Probably not.
Yeah. Never.
Yeah, probably not.
We then just
can I have the sketch back where I pitched you the painting? No. Yeah. No, I got to keep that too.
That's ours actually.
Yeah.
We
I might need that.
You're going to need that.
Then, we like to drown the babies.
We've been calling the movies we've been writing lately shelf paper, just because like we've written so many movies, and then like the studio head gets fired, and you're like we had a movie that was so popular at one of these studios, and everybody's like, we love it, can't wait to get it going. Oh, hey, did you guys hear that everybody just got fired?
So even more than acting with writing, I feel like writing is more of a tangible skill set because you can't just go act. You can go write.
Not unless you're on the streets in France. I feel
And even so, there's still every day is like, who knows if this will go or not?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. I mean, even when people go, this is happening, the paperwork is signed, you still, again, squish your excitement down because you're like,
no.
Well, yeah. Because so many times you've been disappointed, and every time you allow yourself when someone's like, look, I know what other – but this time this thing is really going, and then you start to – and it's kind of funny that it brings us all back in this circle because it's why I started the podcast, because we were working on a show for E! That they were like, the show is definitely going. We're rebranding this other show. We want this. It's going to happen. And then, of course, you know, and
we didn't want that. God.
Oh, we decided not to do it. I was like, we worked on that for five months, and you said, "Yeah, I know." But the head of the
company,
guys
didn't know. It didn't test well.
And so that's when I got all pissed off and was like, well, "I'm going to start a podcast." And that's when I called these guys and I called you. And it was a Thursday, and we set it up for the Sunday,
Super Bowl Sunday. You got Senor Abuelito sang that beautiful theme song.
The beautiful theme song, which is why I think you know the takeaway lessons are being able to, you know, just because like a tree gets chopped down doesn't mean that you can't scavenge the seeds and plant other trees. You know, like
we've actually never had something good happen to us that didn't come off of a failure.
So that alone is a skill set of being able to not go, well, fuck everything.
Yeah. We wrote Reno and Night at the Museum because we had a deal in place to write Taxi 2.
We wrote
Taxi with Jimmy Fallon and Queen Latifah.
Oh, wow.
It tested amazing. Came out. Almost ended our careers. The producer called us. He said, you guys are going to be radioactive for a little while.
Oh, that's
fuck. So not only was there no Taxi 2 for us to write, they called us in. They're like, you got to pick one of these three children's books to fulfill your contract on Taxi 2. That book we picked was Night at the Museum. It was the children's book of Night at the Museum.
God.
So like, and then, and Reno 911 was a failed, the greatest success of my life is a failed Fox pilot that then ran for, 88 episodes in a movie.
Did you straight up audition for Odd Couple?
No. I got a call about it, and I remember thinking, I don't know if that's a good idea, trying to redo the Odd Couple. I was like, that's the level of difficulty.
Because they've tried a couple times.
Yeah, they've done it a couple times.
There was a black version, like Ron Glass from Barney Miller was in it.
There was there was an animated cartoon. But you know, the thing I thought was, I am kind of perfect for that, was my first thought, which was a bummer. It's one of those times you look in the mirror and have a tiny bit too much perspective on yourself. You're like, yeah, I'm basically that annoying. Yeah. But the other thing I thought was, you know, Tony Randall was third Felix Unger. If it had been only Tony Randall and then me attempting it, I probably would not have done it.
Right.
But since...
Jack Lemmon.
Ron Glass. Since there have been a bunch, I felt more like... And because Gary Marshall's on the show also, I was like, you know what? I think there's an attempt to be made there, you know, because Tony Randall, you know, certainly, you know, looked at the Jack Lemmon performance and did something different. And I think I've looked at both of their performances and still done something a little different. So it was intense, but I'm really happy playing the part. It's really fun. Just like...
Well, the sitcom schedule couldn't be more perfect for the rest of your life.
It's really amazing. But I get to do, like, I get to play my cello on the show, and I get to do lots of weird little things. I get to add a lot of my own lameness.
Would you be happy working on the show for, like, you know, would you want it to... I'm sure you want the show to go for 100 episodes and go into syndication and stuff.
I just
want to
do renegotiate twice. Just two times. I don't need to do Big Bang renegotiate. Well, no, that'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is... You know, it's funny how has your perspective on the is there a noticeable change in your perspective on the business from when you were in the state? I mean, would you have rejected a show like this back then? Like, no, it's a network sitcom, and I'm not doing a fucking network sitcom.
Probably, I probably would have considered myself too. I would have edgy. Said I have too much street cred and I'm too cool to do something like that.
Right,
but that was the other reason. That's the other reason I think I was probably a good choice for it, because I'm more of a sort of indie. I've never been in any hits. what do you call that when you've never
there
been in any
hits?
But you've written them.
People who have been on hit sitcoms.
There are really aren't. Yeah. There's some.
It's a small group.
Yeah.
Especially now it's a small group.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you don't get, you get like a week.
Boy, they will, this is a town really gets fickle. They can't wait to cancel you. Yeah.
It's just the fingers got, like right on the cancel
button.
Reno
911 got canceled. It was still a huge hit. It was doing, he was doing great. We were very surprised by that. Yeah.
Are you guys going to go back and do anything else? Another movie or something?
Reno-wise?
Yeah.
We probably will at some point. We get together once in a while. We did went and we shot like a... the guy who was in charge of the station that we filmed at and ran for sheriff. So we went and shot a commercial for him, and it was really, really fun. Like, it's really fun to put on the outfits.
I mean, when you guys were on at midnight, that was so much fun.
That was one of my favorite things we kind of ever did. My God. Was the all Reno 911 at midnight episode.
That was spectacular.
It was really great. It was really...
You guys, I mean, like, I don't know how... I don't know if they... I think they put the unedited version on the website, but
you
it was...
You can see like 50 minutes of it, I think. Huh.
And that was about what it was. Mm-hmm. It didn't go much longer than that.
Yeah, we only cut like just
a couple minutes. I think just a couple minutes here and there, but it was... That was a remarkable...
It is so fun to be that dumb, you know?
Well, it's because, you know, when
you Trudy's so fun to, like, try to pitch jokes to, like, because she can literally say anything.
Well, that what's great about all of the characters, myself included, is the reason I think we're good at playing them is they're just the heightened version of us. Like... And I say this, that's true about Carrie, it's true about Ben, it's very true about me, which is I go from like a 3 to like an 11 of personality. Yeah.
Wow.
But there's a lot of overlap.
That was such a riff fest. Mm-hmm. That was so much fun.
It was really good, and it was beautifully wrangled by you. I really don't know. I sent you a note afterwards. I was like, I don't know how you've wrangled that, because we are also hard to wrangle, though.
Yeah. I think it's helpful that I know all of you guys very well, and then...
But it takes some authority,
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was really
fun.
Really good one. It's that kind of...
Have there been other in-character at Midnights?
Not many. We did one with Paula Tompkins and two of the puppets
from
No You Shut Up. And then,
well, that's weird, because Paul was Paul.
Is Paul. And, but have we done that?
In-character, no.
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 I guess not. Not counting...
That was fantastic.
Maybe we should come on as the characters, but in civilian clothes. I got to bust out the Dangle Morrissey t-shirt, and the denim shorts.
That'd be fantastic. Just, it's basically...
Just
making a margarita.
Off-duty, Reno off-duty.
Like
the Reno off-duty episode.
Every 6 months, we should bring the Reno guys back to do a...
We could... Oh, by the way, I bet me and Mike Black and Kerry Kenny would probably come on as the Viva Variety, but none of the kids would know who that... Yeah. No one would care.
That's incredible.
Unfortunately, no one would care who those people are. Is the only bummer about that.
Are you doing anything with Wet Hot American Summer or no?
No.
Is that a different camp?
No. No matter how much, matter how much I love them, it's the same camp. No, I have no. I'm not in it at all. I get, they usually give me like a special thanks.
Got it.
But no.
I didn't know what the.
No, the only
know.
David Wayne movie I'm in is The Tent.
Okay.
Is the only one I make that every state member makes. Every state member is also in the Reno movie.
Yeah.
Also. Yeah.
So when David Wayne said that the state hates SNL, I'm still trying to find
it. It's not David
God
Wayne.
Damn it.
Myra was right the first time. Oh, no. Everybody has to scroll back to see what he's saying.
Scrubbing backwards, scrubbing backwards. Well, congratulations on Odd Couple.
Gentlemen.
And
every 650 times, I'll come in.
That sounds great.
Is that what you're at right now?
Yeah.
And technically, I've actually, this is my third, so.
Yeah.
Six
is this your third or fourth?
No, four. These are your fourth. Four. You're on with Ben when you guys were promoting the book.
Right.
It's your live show, Meltdown.
Yeah. Oh, and that one too.
But I am constantly inspired by
the New York one. No one will ever hear.
Oh my god! The audio god, clip. We did a lost episode.
I bet. Hang on. I bet someone could fix that now. I still have the files.
Do you still have the files?
I still have the files.
That was amazing.
What theater was that at?
It was at the Gramercy.
Yeah. Oh, this is the Gramercy. Yeah. Jim Gaffigan was on.
That was a power show.
You were on, and then when we got the audio file after the show,
it was a hit.
There's like a continuous throughout the whole thing, but you could probably scrub out that. You could probably pull out that.
No, it's not a continuous hum. It's an audio hit. Click. It's a hit. It's a pop, 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 pop. That goes through. Yeah. I'll track it down.
That would got the lost Nerdcast.
God, that's
that was a nice night. That was a fun night.
5 years we've been doing this.
I was hilarious.
That was a big show. I'm trying to remember what happened.
We did.
You actually did two back to back.
Yeah,
yeah, we did.
Because I was in the first one, and then Gaffigan was in the second one.
Yeah,
both the stars of Shia LaBeouf's movie.
What?
Oh, that's right.
He's
a star. I was co-star. Little did you know when you were recording that podcast, those two guys would go on to star.
In a plagiarized
Shia LaBeouf movie. Giants walk the earth, you guys.
He seems to be doing okay now.
Shia?
Yeah.
Yeah, seems great.
Is he okay?
I don't know.
He's not at the gym recently. He's got a rat tail now.
Yeah.
Is he still working out in jeans?
Yeah.
Yeah. He works out in jeans?
Works out in jeans.
Skinny jeans and combat boots.
No.
Yep.
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
I mean, I just think it's a bad. I mean, like,
I just think it's
very
impressive.
Abrasive.
Yeah, yeah,
and it
very impressive.
Heat.
Oh, it's
very
super
impressive.
Not great for your genitals.
It's not good at all.
Maybe it helps in sweat. I don't know.
Yeah. How
are you supposed to have unsimulated sex in movies if you're tearing up your nuts at the gym?
But the other thing is, if you're just trying to break in jeans. Nothing better you can do.
Better. I guess that's true. Yeah.
Other than do it with an erection. Like if you,
that's when to do it.
Yeah.
You got to go to the gym. I like
go to
the gym with a boner.
Get a boner.
Go to the gym
have the
and
best,
get a boner.
The best pair of broken in jeans of your entire life. Get right in the pool with them on.
I mean,
the steam room with them on.
Nothing like boner squats to break in a nice
new
pair of jeans.
Bobby Lee breaks in jeans for people. I am 100% not kidding. Next time he's on, ask Bobby Lee. Does he or does he not break in jeans and then sell them to businessmen?
I will absolutely ask
he
him
does.
That the next time he's on.
He tried to talk me into it. He's
that,
like, Tom, you can make
tracks.
So much money, man. I was
that
like,
tracks.
Bobby, you know I write movies and stuff, right?
Yeah, but, what
you
are you wearing
also,
during
you could
those...
also break in jeans for businessmen.
Okay.
I'm not going to do that.
Wow. Well, congratulations on
Thank
the show.
Thank you, guys.
And you continue to. You know, there was a while where it was very funny how much you were losing at midnight, and now you're on quite a winning streak.
Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem with that. As a person affiliated with the show who's been around the show for a long time, I didn't really come out swinging hard the first couple times because – I just didn't come out swinging hard. You know, it was like, hey, it's a, whatever. It's a lark, guys. It doesn't really matter, right? The internet then started to hate me so much that I was like, okay, fuck this.
No, I'm going
to
try.
No, I'm not losing anymore. So I refuse to lose now, basically.
It's
Have
been
I
working
lost
quite well.
I don't think I've lost
like,
in like 5 or 6.
What's it like to lose, you guys? I don't even know.
It's great. Well, you got to be on as much as me and you'll know.
That's true.
technically, I haven't lost either, but I also haven't won.
Yeah. People frequently pitch that
pitch
I should
host.
That
you host and then
we
do it
and compete. Maybe we'll do that at some point.
It's
the most frequent text I see about
it.
It is the most frequent I see, too. People want to see you play.
I think it'd be fun.
No, you lost.
You know what we should do?
You won't lose. Although I never thought I would either.
You know, the other thing we should leak is the original Tweeter Dome pilot.
That would be weird because so many things about it were bad. A lot was good, But like, we Tweeterdome was the original at midnight pilot hosted by me.
Yep.
With it was set in like a Thunderdome.
Yeah.
There was ninjas would bring out the competitors, and they were in thumb handcuffs, and then we'd take the handcuffs off their thumbs so they could tweet.
And the show had a co-host, Sarah Jean Underwood was
Sarah Jean Underwood, and she would, if you lost, she would blow on a French horn. And it was pretty insane. I actually haven't seen it in a long time.
I just remember when...
I remember my face is kind of fat in it
when
too.
The head of Comedy Central called me and said, we're not going to pick up the pilot you did for us, but... Tom Lennon and Funny or Die have made this other show called Tweeterdome, mm-hmm. and we're interested to see if you would want to come host and help redevelop the show. And I said, send me the link. And within 1 minute, I was absolutely in love with the show. I'm like, this is fucking brilliant. Why is this not on television yet?
Were you hesitant at first before watching
there was
it?
Not a second of hesitation.
Yeah.
There was not a second of hesitation because I loved everyone who was involved. He said, they said, Funny or Die produced, Tom and Ben produced. This other company called Serious Business created the show, and it Weird Al, Kumail, and Natasha were on.
Once again, she's I've never done a pilot that she wasn't in.
And she crushes on Tweeterdome.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And
did she win? Kumail won.
And spoiler.
Yeah. Spoiler alert on a thing that happened 3 years ago.
3 years ago. But honestly, it was such a... It's like... The pacing of the jokes.
You should put it as an Easter egg. Hide it somewhere where you can find it.
I dug up a pitch that I had written for this for At Midnight that was dated November 2013. And ooh. I was like, wow, we've been doing this show for a while.
Yeah, you've been
doing
it for a long time.
It is we've insane. Done over 200 episodes. Yeah. You could syndicate our show now.
Did you ever see I wrote the
Please do.
At Midnight,
I love residuals.
The movie trailer? Did you ever see that sketch?
No.
I'll send it back to you. You never saw the sketch I wrote?
I don't think I did.
It's a movie trailer for the At Midnight, the movie.
That's amazing.
I'll send it to you today.
Please.
Well, why don't we make that?
We can at least just put that up on the website.
Yeah. So you're going to send me that, and
I'm going to get
the space thing, and then also the original Reno pilot.
I'm actually going to do that.
Yeah. I would love that.
Great.
All right.
Gents.
Tom Lennon.
Always a pleasure.
Nerdcast.
Thank you.
The nerd is
he's
got to make you a scarf and some gloves, and a scarf and some gloves, and
where did
you
come from?
Don't be nervous. The nerd is the podcast for you. It's going to make you a socks and some gloves and a socks and some gloves.
Ring. Enjoy a burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history.
Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now, in hardcover or digital editions, wherever you get your books.